Hello, welcome to a live, well, it's not live because you're listening to it whenever you're listening to it, but a live recording. Me and Jermaine in the same place in the hotel room in the middle of London. How you doing, Jermaine?
What? Sean's text to bribe me here was, oh, Jermaine, I've got a quiet room.
In a hotel.
Yeah.
Come on round. I've even got caramel cappuccino latte, something that I can get. The caramel is drinking a caramel coffee.
Double caramel over it.
Yeah. Nice. How you been? You all right?
Good. Crazy. Obviously, I've just come straight from work. Obviously, madness. Yeah. And obviously, my story. Yeah. So I'm slowly getting back into jogging, obviously. Yeah. You know, I have to get rid of the belly. I don't want to actually turn into a real bus driver.
Yeah.
And I was running around Regent's Park.
Yeah.
And I'm coming running back, and I looked on the floor and I saw a £10 folded up.
Yeah.
And as I'm picking it up, this woman saw me picking it up. But I picked it up and she looked at me, and it wasn't hers.
Yeah.
So I picked it up, and then she was up, and then I carried on running. I was thinking, no, this is mine. But I didn't even blink. I saw it, picked it up, and carried on going. Didn't even blink. Right.
Yeah.
So I'm thinking, yeah. So what I did, with that £10, I bought 3 scratch cards.
Yeah.
And scratched them off. And I didn't win. So I was like, shit. But I mean, let me check. I went to the shop to check to see if I won.
Yeah.
And actually, I won £5. Because obviously, I didn't do the scratch card. You know, like, read it properly, as I do.
Yeah.
So I was thinking, okay, maybe I'm going to be lucky again. So I bought 2 lottery tickets.
Yeah.
No win. But ironically, I was on the bus.
Yeah.
Same day. And I'm pulling into the traffic lights. And this girl's crossing the road, and then she starts walking towards the bus and not crossing the road. I'm like, what's she doing? And as she's walking towards me, I saw a £5 note right in front of the bus. I couldn't get out the bus. I was like, no! And she picked it up and carried on walking. And as she walked, obviously, you know, the Pelican crosses, you've got to like walk back on yourself.
Yeah.
So when she was going past, I opened the window and said, half that's mine, 50-50. She said, get lost. Yeah.
You can't get twice lucky in one day, do you?
Yeah.
Yeah. So no wins, no lottery wins for you.
No, I only scratch cards that I didn't even know I won. Yeah. No lottery wins.
And I didn't win this weekend because I ran in a race in Holland, in Haarlem. And I was running around. It was a 10K race. The only race in Holland I've ever had, but it's been a proper hill. So it's quite a good little run. And it was a 30 degree heat on Sunday. So it was really boiling hot. So it was a toughie. But halfway round, someone said, I don't know how we got the message got across, that the winner won €1,000. So the winner won, like, I didn't know at all. I was chasing around this guy. He was a bit away from me. So this guy won. He was probably 10 meters or so away from me. But Molly told me halfway through the race, it's €1,000 prize. And I thought, why didn't they tell me that at the beginning of the race? €1,000. But then I found out it's €1,000 if you,
break the record.
When €1,000 for, Hugo Boss clothes. But still, that's pretty good.
Well, that's just one suit.
Exactly. So I didn't win.
Because when you were telling me this, I was thinking, was he running next to you? And they said, oh, £1,000, and he just took off.
To be fair, he'd already got, you know, one of those things, like, you think, looking back, you think, oh, I could have won that. But actually,
yeah.
He had it. He beat me by 20 seconds. And yeah, he was miles ahead in the end. But he was quite funny. He was a ginger guy, and I managed to get Greta up on the podium.
Whoa. Is that a problem?
But he matched my daughter's hair, and she was up on the podium with him, and he said, I said something about, oh, it's nice to see that there's a ginger for her to look up to. And he said, it's not ginger hair. It's, he said, it's the rusty endings of Nerves of Steel. He said, yeah.
Oh boy.
So my daughter's going to have rusty endings of Nerves of Steel when she grows up and gets a bit older. But hey, that was good. But training's going well for me. Did you do your park run?
I did. It was funny.
Time? Can you tell us? Or was it a secret?
I can tell you the time. Yeah. Obviously, it's not great.
Yeah. Go on.
But we turned up. You know, like park run. It says park run, but it's along the coast, so there's no, you ain't running on grass.
Okay.
Or no park.
Yeah.
And we're casually leaning on the start line.
Yeah.
And they said, only sub 20 runners at the front. And there was loads of little kids at the front, and me and Phil Tolbert.
I'm sorry.
And we took off. All little kids just bolted off.
Yeah.
And I couldn't get one of them. One of them just took off, so I came second.
Oh, really?
I got beat by a whippersnapper.
What was your time then?
I did 17:50.
That's all right.
Yeah.
Man. Is it a tough course, though?
Out and back, so it was up by loops, so 2.5 loops.
Okay, all right. That's all right.
But it was all right. It was funny. But the kid was really funny because he finished and collapsed. But I said he should have finished, like brushed his shoulder or something, dusted it up.
Yeah. And that's Phil Tolbert, former international.
He's going to hate me for saying something.
if you knew watch running back in the day, Phil was one of the only guys running with massive, great big dreadlocks, wasn't it?
Little plaits. Yeah, he was the only.
Yeah.
Everyone thinks he's Jamaican, but he's obviously from Sudan, which is funny.
Oh, okay.
But
right.
Like, I call him Sideshow Bob.
So if you were there down in Devon running the park run this weekend, you saw Sideshow Bob, the Caramel Kid. I hope you had a nice time. But hey. But I've been training, obviously. I'm trying to now go for this mountain running stuff.
Yeah.
So I've been coached now by Martin Cox. So people might know Martin Cox's name, but he's coached a number of people like Robbie Simpson, the most recent Commonwealth bronze medalist at the marathon. And he's coaching Beth Pascal, who we interviewed a couple of weeks ago. So Martin's overhauling my training, doing loads of treadmill sessions, one treadmill session a week. And I did it yesterday, and it was all right. First one ever. It's really hard.
When you say overhaul, is he changing a lot of stuff or just tinkering it?
Well, I think what I'm doing more, which is I like, is I'm doing a lot more sprinting. So I'm sprinting every couple of days.
Is that because of the DNA test?
No, it's because it's his advice. I do strides every 2 days.
Yeah.
And I'll do diagonals, which are like their Kenyan style session. So do you know, you go down a football pitch, you sprint from corner to corner, so opposite corners.
And then jog the flats.
Yeah. So I've been doing those. I've been doing the strides. And I'm really loving it. I immediately feel your stride feels better, doesn't it, when you start sprinting a lot? Like, I feel like stronger. My whole entire stride shape feels better and more robust.
But in your stride, do you try and run your stride where you're trying to be smooth, or are you trying to run it where you're actually trying to go fast?
More the first one.
Trying to go smooth, so trying to be fluent and stuff. Yeah,
yeah. But I am going pretty quick, but I'm not.
You're not.
My eyeballs aren't coming.
Yeah. Okay.
But it's really good. I'm enjoying it. And I'm enjoying it. I did treadmills yesterday. We did 8 times 3 minutes yesterday at 10% incline. And it was good. I actually got faster. I turned the treadmill up a little bit as I went on. So it was quite nice. But it's nice to be. The problem with treadmills is, like, it's all right when you've got like a session like 8 times 3 minutes. If you're doing it outside, you're not looking at the clock. But the treadmills, like,
the clock's right in front of you.
Oh, man. When you watch the clock, it takes way longer. Yeah. So, like, mentally is the hardest thing with those sessions. But
just cheat when you run on the treadmill. Yeah. Jump, run. And the treadmill goes underneath you. Yeah.
But the trouble is, like, in real life, right, if you jump, run, in a way, you can treat it only a little bit. Do you know what I mean? It's still it's labour intensive to keep that jumping up and down going. Do you know what I mean? So it's
a bit. Yeah, but you think about it, on the it's going underneath you. So the more you're in the air, the less running you're actually doing. But you're not going anywhere.
Yeah, true. Yeah.
this is how Whiteman got the I think it was the mile or 800 world record.
Oh, really?
On a treadmill.
Really?
He's so lanky.
Yeah.
He was almost jump running.
This is Anthony Whiteman. Like, didn't he win
the giraffe? Yeah, the giraffe of a runner. Yeah.
Yeah. Wasn't he still running sub 4 minute miles and it is like in his 40s and 50s?
Yeah,
cracking. I must admit, we tried to get him on the show recently, but he hasn't responded. So we'll see.
Well, me and him ain't friends. That's probably why.
Oh, really? I didn't know that. I should have asked you that before.
That'll be next week's story.
Okay. the bust up story, Jermaine and Andy Whiteman. But hey, but there's not been a lot of, like, we usually have a little feature about news. There's not been a lot happened like this year. I think there's a lot coming this weekend. So the one major story in terms of global athletics is obviously we've got the Diamond League on Saturday in Rome. But Semenya, we had a whole show about Semenya a few months, well, probably 3 or 4 weeks ago now. She's had the decision by the CAS has been not overturned, but postponed. So she's now allowed to compete again. So I don't know I tried to make out what exactly happened, but I didn't get through it. But all I know is it's been postponed. So she is allowed to compete. So she might even compete in Oslo.
Maybe
in the 100 meters.
They saw her do a 5K behind closed doors and it was so bad. They said, whoa. Yeah. Let's just revoke this thing for part-time.
Nobody wants to see this 5K.
But we was having this debate, like, with my training group and stuff. We were saying, why she can either retire because she's obviously done well, made loads of money, or just take the drugs to you know, that make it an even playing field. Yeah. But she has got the right to say, oh, I don't want to take your drugs. But she has got a natural advantage over the other people. But I guess that's just unlucky.
Yeah, it's true. But it's hard, like, because there's other debates, like, so, like, you go, is it fair, right? So, like, when you go for a job, this is taking it in a whole different
way. Well, I guess it's a good comparison.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah, but if you go for a job and some guy who is born naturally brilliant at maths, right, and it's unfair that he's so good at maths, right, but he's so brilliant at maths, you can't, like, say to him, you're too good at maths, you're going to have to take some kind of pill to stop you being so good at maths. Just to make it even blame for everybody to get this job.
You have to use a calculator to work it out slower.
Yeah. So it is. It's hard, but because it's so much, it's because
she's closer to the other opposite gender, and obviously that gender's running faster. Where if you talk about mathematics, obviously numbers are numbers. It's not quite the same.
And also because it's like they've set the classification is they want a men's competition and a women's competition.
Yeah.
And the best way to judge gender is testosterone.
Yeah.
So therefore, they have to have that classification. So mine's a crappy analogy because actually, there's no anyone can do maths, right? So you're not saying.
But I tell you what would be interesting is when it's like you get transgender athletes.
Yeah.
So what category would they feature in? Because would it go like natural birth or what they are now or if they've changed over?
Yeah.
So like you said, it all come down to testosterone.
Yeah. There's a really good article on Let's Run actually about a guy, I think he's won a variety of titles over in the American collegiate system because I think you can decide your gender at college in the US. I'm pretty sure that's
really?
A fact. You can pretty much declare your gender and go for it. And he's won a variety of titles. He's a transgender athlete. I forget the life of me what his name is, but I'll try and put a link up on the show notes about this guy. He's won 3 or 4 different NCAA titles, sprinting stuff.
Okay.
And he's formerly a man, he's now competing as a woman.
Yep.
And you can get away with it. The only
get away with it like it's a criminal offence. Yeah.
The only place that they enforce this is at international competition.
Okay.
But obviously now they're not going to enforce it because Semenya's gone to a Swiss court and she's got that overturned. So,
because obviously this day and age, things are more open, people are more, you know, it's going to become probably an issue in the future.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know how they're going to decide it. We certainly, our brains are certainly too small to decide that sort of stuff. But hey. But in terms of other news, we're recording here on a Thursday in this beautiful hotel room in London. Tomorrow night is Fast Friday. So for English listeners, they'll know about this. It's the English 10,000 meter championships. It's being held at Walthamstow. This is going to be too late for you to know what's typical
Sean schoolboy error.
Yeah. But it's looking good. Look out for the results. I think there's going to hopefully be a couple of really fast times there, particularly in the 10,000. I know one of the guys who works with me, Rebel, he is he's pacing. He's pacing 20.
That's going to be a suspect.
Yeah. He's going around. I think he's going around in 50 minutes. But he's the second pacer.
Okay.
So they're looking for about a 28-minute run there. So it's not been a long while since like there's been that many good races in England where there's 28 minutes.
So is this a warm-up for the night of the 10K?
Yeah. Which is, we'll lead on to the night of 10Ks in a minute, actually, because that's going to be something we'll talk about in a sec. So if you did get down there, hope you had a good time. If you did race there, congratulations. Hope everyone had a good one.
I didn't know you was Mystic Sean.
Mystic Sean. I reckon the winner's going to be... Yeah, I'm not going to guess. But yeah, that's on Friday. And also this weekend is Comrades Marathon over in South Africa. So I think there's a couple of good guys going over there. I think Steve Way, people all know Steve Way, the marathon runner, he's going over there and running. And also another Steve, friend of the show, Steve Hobbs from Victoria Park and Tower Hamlets Running Club. He's going over there and he's been ready to go for Comrades. And also my coach, Martin Cox, is going to run Comrades this year. So good luck to Martin. Hope he has a good one. I'm sure he's going
to
smash it.
You better do good because Sean looks up to you.
Yeah, I do. Yeah.
We don't want no poo-poo in you.
So that's really good. But today's show, we've got a couple of things to talk about. First of all is...
Sean's blood doping.
My blood doping. So I've been told by Martin I need to get my blood tested. And I've been given a blood test to try by Threva. They are offering me a test, and they're going to test a variety of things, including, so I'm going to do it in a second, live on air. They're going to test my testosterone. Right, okay.
So
playing on. Yeah. So it's free testosterone, which is different to total testosterone. It reflects the amount of testosterone that's available for your body to use. So we're going to test that, how I do that. We're going to test iron. Obviously, a lot of people do their blood test to test iron to map how they're doing. So obviously iron plays a role in carrying oxygen around your body, and iron deficiency is thought to be higher in athletes, and it could lead to longer for muscles to repair. So iron is important. So I'm going to test that with the blood test. My vitamin D levels, which obviously bone health and bone injury is very important, and vitamin D is important for that. And B9 and B12, which is help produce red blood cells that carry oxygen around the body. So we are going to test that.
In this test,
yeah,
is they do that compulsory, or did you have to ask specifically for those individual things?
They suggested to me that those would be the best things to test for. Okay. And I know Martin said to me, we need to test your blood to check it out. And that these are the things that would be the factors that we should look into. So
is this a running specific blood testing kit?
They're not running specific necessarily. So they cover all sports.
Yeah.
However, they have a specialism in running. So they are, they're keen to help out runners and their testing. And obviously with these sorts of things, it can help you influence your training and your diet and stuff, and how to if you can map your levels and basically test it.
Okay, so, let's talk real talk. How much does this kit cost?
So there's three different levels. So I'm doing the advanced, but there is a basic, which is £24. There's an essential is £24, a basic, which is £49, and an advance for £69. But we have a code which you guys can use. So everyone who listens, if they want to try this out, you can obviously listen to me and how it goes for me. In a month's time, we're going to see get results back from Freebet, and they're going to talk them through online with me. But if you're interested in checking out, we've got a code, GetRunning25. If you want to check out Freebet, it's freebet.co, and you can check that out and see what kind of tests they do. So GetRunning25, code at checkout, and you get £25 off
the basic and advanced kits.
That's a good little deal for everybody if everyone fancies getting involved with that.
It also saves the hassle of going to the doctors, trying to book an appointment.
Absolutely.
That stuff. So yeah. Just order it online, it comes to you. Yeah, I think that's a better system.
Yeah.
If you just want to check up on, you know, your stuff.
Yeah, and also you give your samples, you do the thumb prick, you send it back, they'll send you back the results. All done. Haven't got to talk to a doctor, doesn't know what they're doing with the athletes and with tests. So that's really good.
But what if, I suppose, do they give you a summary? Well, you're going to find out.
We're going to find out.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So everyone, if you listen ahead, you'll be able to hear exactly what the service entails and what we get back from it. So it's pretty good.
But talking about blood shizzle.
Yeah.
Obviously, when I was training in Ethiopia with Jammer's group.
Yeah.
And then when we went to Spain.
Yeah.
We left like Sunday night, and on Monday morning, the police raided the hotel.
Yeah, I heard. I've never really asked you about this. So hang on, what happened?
This is hush hush stuff, you know.
So this is when Jammer, they
Genzebi Dibaba's coach at the time.
Yeah, and that's when he became under total scrutiny. Now he's almost been vilified now, right? He's not.
He's gone off the map.
He's gone off the map because of this raid. So what did they find again?
So they went. So me and my coach obviously left Sunday night. The police came Monday morning.
Yeah.
They raided the hotel and they found like loads of EPO. I didn't see any, but they found loads of syringes of EPO, right?
Okay. Yeah.
But they were like, oh, two English guys escaped.
I remember seeing this on Let's Run.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it was quite funny because I was training really hard, but I was racing really bad.
Yeah.
So as soon as we got back, we didn't even know this was happening until a couple of days later.
Yeah.
But as soon as I got back, I got blood tested.
Yeah.
Because I was thinking, well, I want to know why I'm running so bad. So obviously I went and got blood tested. And then some things were low. So I was thinking, I better top up.
Yeah. Okay.
But these guys that were in the hotel, obviously the police came, tested them. No one got caught with EPO in the system, but they had EPO on the premises.
Okay. Right.
And then apparently there was undercover police that infiltrated the group.
Really?
And were like following around. And then they obviously saw him throwing away the syringes at night.
Really?
Yeah. Crazy stuff. But like when I was there, like when I was in Ethiopia, because I'm quite suspicious, I was like in their rooms and stuff, but I didn't see anything.
No.
But it's only when we went to Spain, obviously it got a bit dodgy because they were doing three really hard track sessions a week, and then still racing that same week.
Wow.
Where I could only do one and then race. And then when we was racing, we was like at the same level, and these are like no-name athletes.
Yeah. Okay.
So like that was a bit off.
Yeah, okay.
And it was quite funny because when after the raid and then I came back to train with them, all their performances of the average athletes dropped off. So they were still training hard, but when they raced, they were like blimmin' 5 or 10 seconds behind me in the race.
Ah, wow, okay, all right. Wow, so he's still coaching those guys? He's still...
Oh, no, he's obviously... He doesn't coach them.
Ah.
But it was really funny because the IAAF got in contact with us and we had to go into London for interviews.
Really?
Like interrogations.
No, wow.
And like the guy, we called him Agent. He came out, he went to my coach's house because he wanted to see the setup to see if it was like really dodge.
Really?
Yeah.
Jesus. So nothing came after that? You did all the tests and stuff and it was...
We was fine. Like he said, oh, you're legit. So that was fine. But then he just wanted to know info on the group and certain people in the group.
Yeah, okay. Because nothing's been held against the barber or anything.
No,
else.
So they obviously, like I said, all the athletes got tested and no one got caught with anything in their system.
Okay, yeah.
But there was only one athlete that had syringes in his room. That was Bala.
Yeah, okay.
And then all the stuff was found in...
Mehdi Bala?
No, not Mehdi Bala. He runs for Qatar. Everyone just calls him Bala.
Okay, all right, yeah.
But I think it's Aiden or something like Bala, maybe.
Okay, yeah, yeah.
But yeah, all the stuff was found in Saudi Arabian masseuse in his room.
Oh, really? Okay, yeah. Because he's been linked to Farah, hasn't he, Aiden, since? And people always bring that link up.
They try to, but like if... It's like saying, you know, if you just know someone on Facebook, for example,
yeah,
and they say, oh, you're good friends.
Yeah.
So that's kind of unfair on Mo.
Yeah, okay.
Just because he knows someone, because you think Jammer's Somali, Mo's Somali.
Yeah.
And obviously if you're both in another country or whatever, and you know a fellow Brit that's a runner, and you're in Amsterdam, you're going to say hi and stuff.
Yeah.
And just because that person might be... have bad, he can't influence you.
Yeah, okay.
So I think that's kind of harsh on him.
Yeah. Did you think it was dodgy when they were doing that many track sessions then and still running quick? Did you think, shit, what were you thinking then?
Well, off the bat, you don't think, oh, they must be doping. You just think, obviously, they're good runners. But when it's suspicious when you're doing, obviously, hard training and still racing.
Yeah.
And, you know, like in race week.
Yeah, okay.
It just doesn't make, it's not natural.
Yeah, no. And what were you low on then when your blood test? What did you, because you must have, I've never done it before, but what did you find in your blood test?
Yeah, I was low on iron.
Yeah, okay.
So like, and that magnesium and stuff, so I had to top up on that.
Okay, all right, yeah. So I don't know what I'm going to, who knows, we'll find out in this test when it comes back. But I can't do, I've just realised we can't do this because I've been eating a croissant a minute ago.
Sean, again, schoolboy error.
Yeah.
You just messed up the whole show, Sean.
I messed up the whole show. It requires, I've just looked at the thing, it says requires 8 hours.
I was looking forward to giving you a prick.
We can't do it. So if you ever do this test, guys, with the code, make sure you've fasted before you do.
It's 8 hours, not...
8 hours, yeah. But in this week's show, we are launching the beginning of a series where we are beginning a series of interviews leading up to one specific event. And Jermaine mentioned it a minute ago. It's the night of the 10,000 meter PBs. So on this show, we're going to be talking to Ben Poche. He is here. We're going to chat about how the event came into being, what it's all about, and how you can get involved in the event. But for those that are sort of some top line information, it's on the weekend of the 7th of July, and it started off being a small 10,000 meter event where good runners came together and they ran 25 laps together in an effort to try and improve standards.
It was like a pumped up club 10k,
and it's now influencing, well, obviously Fast Friday is now a similar event to that, so events across England have been influenced by this particular one 10,000 meter evening, and then now it's now become the European.
Well, before that, it was even the British Championships.
Yeah, yeah.
So obviously, it was so popular. Obviously, UK Athletics decided to take it, or whatever they call UK Sport.
Yeah,
took it on.
Yeah,
and then now European.
Yeah, yeah. So as the best in Europe coming down and racing, and I think it's broadcast online, but you should come along if you live in the UK.
Vinco usually. So they might be around.
Yeah, it won't be long before the BBC get it. I bet it is. It's getting close.
Well, they get nudged out because Cranmer and Foster with their fat bellies say, oh, there's no space for those living podcasts.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, troublemakers.
Yeah. But we're going to be there. We're going to be interviewing a lot of different people. So we're going to do a variety of shows looking at different angles. So we're going to look at a club. We're going to try and look at some of the athletes from particular clubs that are going down to do it. We're going to try and interview some of the competitors from last year, some Europeans, some local competitors, and also some of the volunteers that have helped to put this, the event on. But to start that all off, we want to talk to Ben and see what he has to say about the event.
So on today's show, we are talking to race director of the night of the 10,000 metre PBs. We were talking about some various different names we could give you before we came on air, letting people behind the curtain. Shouty Man was one. Broken Man was another, Ben. Father of Highgate Harriers, perhaps, his current incarnation. But how are you doing?
That
you
might,
all right?
That might be a bit too grand, although I feel like I possibly was born in 1879 when Highgate Harriers was first established. great to be on your show, Sean. Thanks for inviting me on.
No problems. And you're getting yourself ready for this the event. You're about 3 weeks out, is that right, from the big day?
I'm deep in the wormhole, deep.
Yeah. How are things going from your perspective?
Yeah, good. I've already had one nervous breakdown. It's all going well. I think spinning lots of plates and lots of people helping me spin all those plates, and that's really good. It's all looking really positive. Really looking forward to cracking on and starting our 2019 edition.
Yeah, fantastic. And of all the kind of governing bodies from various nations, have they confirmed their entries? Is everybody? You know, is your start list confirmed and entries closed?
So if you like the domestic entries that I control, they closed weeks ago. Purely just down onto the number of people that we can actually get into the event.
Yeah.
But no, from a European Cup perspective, they don't actually finally declare the European Cup teams until about just shy of 2 weeks before the start of the event.
Right.
So okay. we got some time yet on that.
Okay, cool. And then are you, I mean, I can remember last year, what was the A race, say the big race of the night. Is that the men or women's race this year? Have you decided who's going to be the top billing, the final event?
No, so I mean, we generally always come down to the performance and entertainment of what we think that race will deliver. So yeah, until we get the European Cup entries and we look kind of how the A races will look on paper and kind of what we think they'll deliver in terms of an entertainment spectacle.
Yeah.
That's when we'll make the decision.
Okay. And is there anything, how many races are you going to have on the night? Have you just, is there a confirmed number of 10,000 meters that we can look forward to?
Oh yeah. So it will be the same format as last year in that respect. So there'll be 9 races in total.
Mm.
Essentially getting quicker and quicker, and then working their way up until the last races of the night will be, the British champs, the world championship qualifying trials, and also the European Cup.
Yeah, and even the ninth race, the qualifying standard was pretty high this year. What did you have to get? What did you have to run as a male or female athlete to qualify for that event?
Sub 31 minutes essentially for the men.
Wow.
31 minutes and change. And then for the women, it was 35 minutes and change.
Okay. Wow.
Our event is elitist in its nature. The whole premise of the event was to help British athletes run faster times.
Yeah.
And so now it's become popular. We are, unlike a road race where you could welcome more and more people into it, we are limited by how many people we can put into our 9 races. So, we stagger the entries, we PB stagger it. So we try and fill it first with as many men who can run sub 30 and as many women who can run sub 34.
Yeah.
And then about 2 weeks later, we then open it up to men who can run sub 31 minutes and women who can run sub 35. And then, you keep going like that, essentially, until all your 9 races are filled. And it was, it got filled even faster than last year. And it's great. But luckily, there are other 10,000 meter races now in the UK offering more opportunities. We just saw that last weekend at Fast Friday, which also integrated the English champs.
Yeah.
I think there's definite there's demand, I think, for more quality 10,000 meter racing in the UK, which is great. That's exactly what we were hoping to achieve with our event, was help create that demand, which didn't really ostensibly seem to exist you know, kind of 6-7 years ago.
Yeah. And thinking about, let's kind of take it back to looking at how this event kind of came into being. And talk a bit firstly about your running. How did you get in? How involved have you been in the sport through your career?
I think that's probably like a lot of people. I got into it as a kid, so I joined Highgate Harriers in 1984. No, and I just love running. I think at that age as a kid, I didn't, you know, I was what, 13, 14 then. I didn't really have a passion that drove me. Yeah. And then, you know, I stumbled into athletics, and I think I was naturally, I was okay. I definitely wasn't the slowest, and suddenly you find something you identify with. And yeah. I think that's probably what athletics has been for me. You know, it's been amazing. It's given me a community, and it's given me, you know, it's always been my area of confidence in life. You know, it's been, yeah. you know, in times of trouble, it's been a great thing to physically do and kind of, you know, release whatever's going on in your head.
Yeah.
But then I think on a wider context, it's, you know, it's given me confidence in other areas of life, and it's been my community. It really has. You know, you can't be part of something, you know, go 3-4 times a week since you're 13, 14, and it's not in your, you know, it's in the marrow of your bones eventually is who you are.
Yeah.
But yeah, I just used to run, and I did the normal thing of just, you know, little narcissist, self-obsessed runner, trying to run faster and faster myself.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, it took me years. And then you just, you know, eventually, like, I got older and slower and more broken. And you start to look around and think, oh, actually, maybe I could actually do something, you know, for other runners rather than just thinking about myself.
Yeah.
Probably should have done it. Maybe should have done it 10 years before I did. But yeah, no, it's all just part of still being involved and something I love. And it's just fantastic to also, you know, be involved in the performance side, you know, seeing not only guys you coach and members of your club, but seeing their peak friends they know all running a bit quicker.
Yeah.
And being part of an event that, you know, excites people. That's what running should be for me, you know, is for me. It's fun, entertainment, excitement, and something you share with, you know, your friends, you know, people at your club who are they're your kin, you know. In 30, 40 years, I think I'll still be speaking to people like yourself, you know, yeah. And all your mates. You form deep relationships, I think, with people at running clubs. It becomes your narrative throughout your lifetime. So
yeah.
It's great to have memories like Night of the 10,000 that we can all talk about when we're sucking on Werther's originals and maybe not able to wipe our own bum.
Yeah. It's a nice picture to look forward to anyway. Yeah.
Thank you.
And a lot of people like, you know, love sport and they love doing it and they'll count it to us. Very few will actually try and kind of improve the scene or to try and give something back to the running community. What is it you love about like the UK running scene? Do you, like the people talk about this term, like grassroots running about, is there something special about that you want to support and you want to encourage?
Well, I think maybe you don't intellectualize it too much. You just kind of, you go with the flow and it's just good fun. But what I love is, I just love the community, like not just my club, other clubs. If, you know, it is quite a niche sport when you look at, you know, us versus football.
Yeah.
And I think that brings everyone a bit closer together. And I just think there's real good banter. There's really good, you know, there's good rivalries and there's good chat. You go in the pub after things like the National Cross Country and, you know, there's a real good sense of intelligent, witty banter between clubs and between athletes, and especially now in social media.
Yeah.
You know, it's extended how people can interact and communicate outside of their own training groups. And, you know, I just know our little universe used to be like London and cross country leagues like the Met League.
Yeah.
And there was just a real sense of community and a real sense of people having a shared experience and having a bit of fun with it. And that's what I loved. And that's probably where it started. I just, you know, back when I started team managing the Highgate men, what did we do? We used to started taking a PA system down to some of the Met Leagues, you know, and you'd be down in Welling Garden City in the rain and you'd be funking out some serious Afro beats, and it's just just for the fun. Just what I loved about athletics is the fact it's a blank canvas.
Yeah,
okay. I genuinely believe it's. I kept thinking, God, there's so much you could do with this. There's so much fun you can add to what already is a, you know, a great sport.
Yeah.
Just because essentially it hadn't changed in what, like 100 years.
Yeah.
You know, it's it's so stripped down. It's volunteers making it happen. And here's a start line. You're going to run around these fields for 5 miles, crack on with it. And then you think, well, it doesn't take an awful lot just to add a little bit of colour to that, you know, whether it's music or, you know, well, we were taking an iron and an ironing board up to things like the 12 stage. Just to have a laugh for the photo op of, you know.
Yeah.
Obviously, we're not really ironing our Highgate vest at Sutton Park. But, what can you do that's different that gets people smiling and having a laugh? And I just think it was such a blank canvas for that.
Well, I was going to ask you, if you thought we had a problem running, we had a problem attracting audiences and generating interest, but you say not really, I guess, in that from that perspective.
I don't know. I don't know, my own experience is you train really hard as a group, and it was always chat and banter in sessions. I used to love, you know, being as much verbal in sessions as maybe running. But then I think you go to races sometimes. I just think as kids, I think it'd be quite intimidating going to a race. Everyone's quite serious.
Yeah.
You know, it can get a bit po-faced, a little bit.
Yeah.
I think maybe that's a little bit off-putting if you're new to it. So I don't know, partly I just think it should be about having fun, you know, or... You know, even if you're running for GB, you know, I genuinely believe because our sport is so commercial, you're very unlikely to make a living out of it.
Yeah.
And so I think you're best off viewing it through the lens of it being a passionate hobby. And I think, you know, hobbies need to be fun if you want to keep doing them.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I just think fun needs to be a huge part of it. And I didn't think there was a problem per se. I just thought really I saw it as an opportunity where you could actually quite simply have a bit more fun with it as well without detracting from the performance. It all started really organically, and I think it would have stopped quite quickly if the majority of people didn't really like what I was doing. But I think at our own club, it also gave us a sense of identity, which was really nice when we were trying to build up to win our first ever Met League men's title.
Yeah.
There was that whole aspect, because it takes 12 men to score for the Met League. For the men, you know, you need a really big body of men who are committed to coming up for those races. And so I was just doing everything I can to make it as fun for those guys as possible. Slowly over time, it kind of, I think people really help push the momentum along with their own ideas. And it's become self-sustaining now. And, you know, that people go to the Met League and it should be a bit of a social. It should be fun. And then we have a real hard competition.
Yeah.
And then everyone's having a laugh after we're in the pub. You know, and if you add a bit of music to that, or you bring a bit of colour, you bring some flags, or whatever you're doing. I just think it added to it.
Well, it was we won national medals. We hadn't won in hundreds of years, and we brought back medals at different events and things because
2016 won the national 12 stage. I mean, that was just that was a dream come true. Really was, and I think that was partly everyone just getting behind the club as a sense of, you know, being part of something bigger than themselves. And I think that's really important. It's very hard to win a 12 stage with a group of individuals just looking out for themselves, because there's always other races they could be doing, other things they could be targeting. And I think it's the same for other clubs. You look what Leeds did this year.
Yeah.
You know, how they dominated it. I think you get a group of guys who want to do something together.
Yeah.
Then that's when the magic happens for these great club events. And I think if you've got a club with good atmosphere and people who want to be there for more than just themselves, then that's when good performance happens. So I think there's definitely a relationship between having fun, wanting to be together, and then, you know, wanting to perform together.
Yeah, and that kind of sense of fun and enjoyment has moved on to this, to the night of the 10,000 meters. But where did the original idea for setting something like that up? And what was your kind of goal with the event originally?
I think. To start with, it was really just, you know, what can we do to put a 10,000 meter event on where if we're really transparent and we try and get good guys and we try and let them know that other people of similar ability are running, what can we do to get a group of people of, you know, good quality all together on the track? Because that was the problem. There were 10,000s previously, but you might get a few people turning up to one or the other race, and then they'd just be running on their own for 25 laps. So it's just, you know, what can you do with just clear communication to say, all right, this is our ambition. We want to try and get a good group of guys together to run, to help you guys run faster times. And then once it started to gain a bit of momentum, then you start to think, okay, what could we do in that first event to also add atmosphere? I mean, I I mean, I've said it before. I just genuinely believe that atmosphere has a direct correlation to increased performance.
Yeah.
You know, from my own experience, things like, you know, my best runs were always in the relays. Like, yeah. You know, stick me on a track with no one there, and somehow my, you know, my performances would never really stack up to how well I'd run when, you know, my mates are all screaming at me. And
yeah.
maybe I'm just an emotional runner, but I think lots of runners are emotional runners.
No, definitely.
So I just then started thinking, what can we do to get, you know, create atmosphere? So music on the back straight, inviting people to stand in lane three.
Yeah.
You know, I think that's that first year, there's some dodgy video of me with my mullet back in 2013, but you can see from that, the crowd, and it wasn't huge, but there were people there. There was probably, I don't know, 50 to 100 people on the home straight.
Yeah, I remember it.
And I think, yeah, of course, you were running in it.
Yeah, badly. Yeah. But hey, I was still
contributing.
Yeah.
Yeah, we had our first sub 30 that day, and we had a brass band playing, and I just think you just try things. And I think if the feedback had been negative or it hadn't really taken off, then obviously it wouldn't have continued. But
yeah,
you kind of take the feedback, and the feedback was positive, and then you kind of just you try and grow it from there. And what else can you do? How can you make it better? How can you help more runners run quicker times? How can you have more atmosphere?
Yeah,
you know, not all the ideas I tried work. I think that's, and I've said that before, but I think if you are going to try new stuff, you've got to be brave and realize that some things won't work.
Yeah,
and that's okay. Long as the risk isn't to the athlete, you know, if you are going to try and innovate a few things, then you've got to be prepared for it not always to work. Otherwise, arguably, you're not really innovating. You're just playing very safe.
Yeah.
So I think in that first year I had this amazing idea that at the 200 meter point, I gave a whole bunch of guys all these foam hands, and they had chosen athletes.
Yeah, yeah.
They were basically, it was like a pacing system. They would let them know with the foam fingers, they'd point up or down if the athlete was on their target time or not.
Yeah.
But I don't know if everyone was just overly ambitious that year, but quite a few people's target times weren't on, and then it's not really the best thing to see a whole group of guys with foam fingers pointing down, because actually you're off your target time. It's not really the most encouraging thing. So yeah, we didn't do our giant foam hands ever again.
I think I had Ken Pike on the corner shouting, "Fucking hell, Sean," and me coming round the corner. I think I can't remember. Yeah, it didn't go well.
Love Ken. Yeah. No, we had Ken, we had Terry McCarthy. They were doing a great job. I think they got a bit despondent as well, because, like, you know, you don't...
For 25 laps.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, oh, great, yeah. And how many years now has it been? When was that first event?
That was 2013.
Okay, right. So we're 6 years in.
Yeah, so... Yeah, this year's event will be number 7.
Okay, wow. So it's been... To say that, like, the numbers you get there now for last year in terms of the crowd, it's been a pretty meteoric rise. And you see guys, you know, people like Zane Robertson and Jake Robertson talking about the event, and, you know, it has garnered international recognition. That's a pretty major rise in interest, really.
It's amazing. Yeah. I mean, and
Why do you think people have jumped on it? Why do you think people are keen to be involved with the event?
I don't know. I think because it shows the event itself has got so much energy. It's got so much passion.
Mm.
And that is because, you know, what makes the event are the people who come and watch it and make the noise and create the atmosphere. That is the event. That is the atmosphere.
Mm.
And then the athletes then are there to perform. It gives them the platform to, you know, to really perform. And I think it's the people that come. They are, you know, so if all, you know, we have done over the years is hopefully created a more and more attractive reason for people to come,
yeah,
be part of the event, watch the athletics, and also treat it almost as an annual social, you know, to come, meet up with old friends. You know, I think we've given them a reason. You know, your food, drink, the highest quality athletics you can probably watch now in Europe. And it's free, you know, and I think there's a bit of innocence and naivety about the event, because it's now this event that does get seen, you know, in countries, you know, abroad. In some respects, you could call it a global event, but it's still run completely 100% as a non-profit. I run it 100% as a volunteer. I don't get a penny.
Yeah.
And right. I think people well, I can't speak for everyone, but I get a sense people really appreciate that no one's trying to make something out of them. No, you know, yeah. No one's trying to get their pound of flesh out of them. Yeah. It's put on by club people for club guys to run quicker. And so I think, yeah, I mean, anyone who's been to the event will see you can tell it's a volunteer organized event. It does creak at the seams a little bit sometimes with organization.
Yeah.
But you're going to get that when people are basically, you know, volunteering their time.
Yeah.
To make it happen. But I think there is so much passion in our sport. And I think, and I'm not saying for one instance that this is the only way to do it, but I think if you can find different ways for people to express their passion, yeah, people like Zane are commenting on it because they're seeing something with so much energy. And I think that is coming organically from our grassroots community. They're coming along, they're coming to the event because they want to be there.
Yeah.
And I think our event is a conduit for that. And I think, like I said, I don't think this is the only way to do it, but I think there are other ways you can create platforms for our sport to show all the passion that exists within it. I think previously there wasn't really a similar event where people could come and vent their love and their passion for, you know, what they do day in, day out. We train, we race at relatively low key events, but I think there is this groundswell of, you know, this is people's lives, you know.
Yeah.
People like me, it's all you do, it's all you know. Yeah. And I think we should be celebrating it more. There should be a way we should be vociferously celebrating something that we invest so much of our time, you know, coaching youngsters, helping others, racing for ourselves, people officiating, you know, it becomes your identity. And I think there are other events, other ways you can do it where you can allow people to not only watch, you know, top quality athletics, but also come and celebrate what they love.
Yeah. And so do you think that then there's been a bit of a disconnect with the Diamond League and these in the Olympics and stuff with, I don't know, whatever reasons, you know, the drugs scandals and that sort of thing. Do you think there is a disconnect between runners and those elite level athletics that could be bridged?
I could only speak for myself in that, I don't always watch a Diamond League. I mean, I do sometimes if there's a story there that I'm keen to follow a race or something. But yeah, it doesn't quite excite me in the same way. And this will sound a bit bizarre, I'm more interested in our own domestic scene.
Yeah.
And watching, you know, I'd almost be more interested to watch again another, you know, if Tomo and Andy Vernon and Alex Yee said, right, someone's going to Facebook Live this. We're basically going to duke it out for another 25 laps at a track on our own. I'd watch that.
Yeah.
Because maybe it's because I can connect to it more. And I think, you know, even things like our Met League, I think there's a real honesty to the competition. And I've got real empathy with what people are trying to do in that. So, yeah, I definitely couldn't speak for the Diamond League. And I know that some, you know, there are a lot of people who go to the stadiums, will pay the money and they will love it. But maybe you could argue there are different audiences.
Yeah.
And so maybe a lot of the guys who come to our event are people who wouldn't ordinarily pay to go watch a Diamond League.
Yeah.
So maybe it's just more a case of acknowledging that, yeah, there will be a Diamond League audience, but there's a plethora of people from our sport who want to access and enjoy the sport in a slightly different way.
Yeah. Absolutely. And with the success of the event, you've obviously come into contact with and dealt with federations and governing bodies such as the European Athletics and British Athletics, who've taken it on as, I mean, they fairly quickly took it on as the trial, didn't they, for the Olympics and the World Championships. Have you had, what's it been like kind of dealing with that, kind of jumping through loops and that sort of thing? Obviously, you've got to be diplomatic to a certain extent. Has it been difficult to you know, shoehorn a grassroots event into their, you know, their idea of what they want to see from a championship race?
Yeah. I mean, it's not without its challenges. It's just that whole juxtaposition. You're dealing with professional, you know, governing bodies, and I'm just one bloke living down in Cornwall, doing it as a volunteer. So there's that whole juxtaposition and expectations and delivery. But no, I mean, I think last year was probably the biggest challenge, incorporating the European Cup and dealing with European athletics and 27 separate federations arriving and then putting them up. And but no, I've got to say, British Athletics have been fantastic to work with. They've got such a good events team there. Just nice people who get it and have just been so helpful. So they are, it's it definitely wouldn't have happened in terms of the European Cup angle without British Athletics support and funding.
Yeah.
But then back in the early days, you know, back when we were getting it off the ground, it was England Athletics who helped then, fantastically. We got some support back in the early days, just enough to cover things like photo finish from Bob Smith. Who's sadly no longer with us. And again, he was such a passionate person for the sport, and he bought into what I was trying to do, and he gave me a little bit of funding, and it helped. So yeah, we were initially, it was the English champs.
Yeah.
And then in 2014, we integrated the British champs. So we hosted the European trials. That's when Joe Pavey won.
Yeah.
And went on to then win the European championships as a V40.
Wow.
Which was just stunning. And you know, she ran something crazy, like 32.11. And the weather was absolutely appalling.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, we worked from British Athletics from back then. But their involvement has grown massively since we've integrated the European Cup.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, dealing with European Athletics, again, it's, probably for them as well. Sometimes they probably wish they were dealing with someone else other than me, but we've made it work, and you have to. It's kind of marrying, this is the event they want to come to and be part of because there's so much energy.
Yeah.
But the way we've helped garner all that energy is the fact it's run by volunteers. And I think to be fair to them, they do appreciate that. And it's, you know, again, they've been really encouraging, but it's not easy. But if it was easy, it would have been done years ago, or everyone would be doing it.
Absolutely.
But no, everyone's main ambition is to make it work and find ways, you know, to kind of rub down the corners, and so that you can marry a volunteer event with expectations of, an international caliber event.
Yeah.
It's definitely been an interesting journey.
Yeah. And I mean, the event's growth is a story, but there's on each individual night there's a whole host of different stories that are playing out on the track. And has there been like one particular, it's difficult to say, but a highlight for you over the course of the last six events that you remember most fondly?
You didn't put that in your pre-ed question, I just suddenly thought about it.
Blimey. I'll give you one.
Lob the grenade right in there.
I'll give you my favourite one, which almost, for some reason, it almost brought me to tears. I don't know why it did. But when Jess Andrews won, because it was just, she was just so, she was not even mentioned as someone who was going to win. And then there was people like Lynette Masai, wasn't there, in the field,
previous world champ, that's right.
Seen her, and she just, like, you could see visibly as she was going around each lap, her confidence was growing. So like the first couple of laps, she was just in about halfway, and she was just taking it easy. Lynette Masai was off the front running, you know, I don't know what else. She got a big lead, and you could just see almost like a moment where Jess thought, I can actually beat Lynette Masai. And she did, and it was amazing. That was incredible. Like, and her reaction at the end was just, she couldn't believe that she won. So for me, that was the one I remember from over the last 6 years.
There are so many, really. I mean, yes, I agree. And you just think, you know, Jess Martin then had her form and her moment. And if our event didn't exist, you know, would it have been realised? That's what I love about it. You know, every year I just like to think, here's this amazing opportunity.
Yeah.
And every year I think, and maybe not even in the A race, it's further down. As you, the deeper and the higher the quality of the A race, the deeper the quality of the B races and the C races. And that's what you want. You want everyone being pushed.
Yeah.
And I just think, you know, there was an opportunity, and here was this great platform and all these thousands of spectators. And it just, you could see, you know, her physiological form, like just blossoming in front of all these people's eyes, and maybe in front of herself. I don't know. That was lovely. I mean, and there's so many stories. I love the fact Kojo he's been our ever present.
Yeah.
That's Kojo. Kairimi, he's been every one, and he's run some stunning times as a V40. I think he ran like just outside 30 minutes last year.
Yeah. On his own for most of it as well.
Towards the end. Yeah. And then when we had Alistair Watson went sub 30. So, you know, having a V40 in our C race running sub 30 is probably the best testament of, you know, where the event has come in the last, you know, 6 or 7 years.
Yeah.
But no, there's been so many stories, you know, Joe Pavey in 2014, and watching, you know, I think it was a bit special watching Vernon and Tomo and Alex Yee
Yeah.
Tonking down that home straight, and both, you know, all three of them running sub 28. That was, I suppose, if you're looking at the kind of the geeky sharp end, for me, that typified what I could only dream the event could be, that you could encourage British guys, have guys in front of them being pushed that hard that they're going to have to run sub 28, you know, to then even be in with a shout of winning the British Championships, let alone chasing, you know, medals for the European Cup.
Yeah, fantastic. Yeah. And as an advert for the event for coming up, we should kind of tell everybody when it's happening and what they can expect so they can all come down and join in. Like you said, it's free to join in. So anyone in the vicinity of London.
Please come. I mean, what else in life is free? My mum used to tell me, we're from a pretty cynical family. You know? Yeah. Ben, nothing in life is free. I quite like that. But she comes every year. And I go, Mother, it's free. It is free. Yeah. You got to pay for your drink, so maybe that's what she meant. I don't know. But where else? What other events can you come? And you literally, we have this is the highest quality European 10,000 meet going. You're not going to see any faster guys, and you can access it completely for free. And for free, you can, once again, you can stand in like lane three of the track. You can have that close proximity to see, feel the speed of the men and the women. You know, you're going to have women running sub 32.
Yeah.
The men are going to be chasing the world champs qualifying time, 27:40.
Wow.
That's all a bit special. And I think to get that close, we're going to build our bridge of thighs, I think that I called it last year. So we're going to be building the bridge over the track again. We're going to have more entertainment on the infield to get more spectators on the infield. So you can choose if you want to be on the outside looking in or the inside looking out. It's probably... Wow. That sounds more profound than I actually intended it to sound. And we've got sponsors coming who are bringing entertainment. We've got Strava are going to be running a segment.
Yeah,
I think it's going to be a national campaign, which is going to go all the way from the Lido path all the way to the top of Parliament Hill.
Yeah.
And so that's going to be a challenge, and they'll be giving out goodies to everyone who completes the challenge. We'll have a little leaderboard.
Yeah.
See who can own the segment on Parley Hill. It's essentially the hill everyone runs up at the start of the national.
Yeah.
Okay. But we'll be going right to the top.
Yeah.
We got our sponsors. We've got London Marathon. We'll be there, really helping make the event happen. Saw will be there once again. We've got our friends up from Runderwear.
Yeah.
Are very kindly sponsoring a very unique way that we will be signifying the end. The last with one lap to go. So in addition to the little bell being rung, we're going to have something slightly bigger. So we'll have a little reveal for that, but that will add some entertainment. So part of the feedback last year was people wanted to better understand the narrative of where the race was. And so Strava have very kindly agreed to sponsor some very large lap counters. So I've got some roadwork LED signs, very large things, some giant lap counters, basically.
Wow.
And then as part of that, we are also going to go live with this our enlarged gong idea. So yeah, you heard it here first.
Exciting.
Potentially it could be a gong. So yeah, why have a bell when you can have a gong?
And it's nine races start. What time does the first race kick off?
The first race, well, we got kids relays starting first. Yeah. I believe they start at 1 o'clock. He just says hurriedly, looking up his timetable. Here we go. So, yeah, you've got the kids' relay starting at 1 p.m., and then you've got the first of the nine races starting at 2:15.
Right.
We've got the second race will be at 3 p.m., then you've got 3:45, 4:30, 5:15. Then at 6 p.m., we will stop. We'll have a little break so the officials can have a hot meal.
Yeah.
But then we also have a Q&A session, and I'm very excited to say we're going to have a very special lady as part of our Q&A this year.
Yeah.
We are going to have 1991... world champion over 10,000. Now, do you know who that is, Sean?
Is it Liz McColgan?
It is Liz McColgan. Whoa. So, yes.
Yeah.
So, we're going to have Liz giving her insight into training and racing 10,000. And it couldn't be any more apt because her daughter will be racing that evening because Alicia got picked for the GB team for the European Cup.
Great.
So loads to look forward to. Again, all free. Come along. Be part of it. We're running our media mile. We'll be having some fun there.
Yeah.
With some entertainment. We've got some well-known people who will be racing over a mile, and they will be chased down by a yet to be announced celebrity. So there you go, bit of fun. Gonna do a mile catch.
What happens when he catches them though? There's nothing. There's no like. It's not like a Black Mirror style thing, and there's like decapitations and stuff. Is there? Everyone's safe.
No, it's more just, I suppose, the shame in front of the thousands of people that you've been caught. Yeah, but no, there's it's not a death race or nothing like that. And we got
maybe next year.
Yeah, well, again, you know, I said this event isn't the only answer, so maybe there is a market for, you know, race or death. I'll leave that to other race organisers to sort out. Yeah, we've got Pro Direct will be there. They're going to be doing some challenges on the home straight in between the races.
Great.
We'll have a brand. We'll be doing some activation. We'll have On Running are going to be there doing some fun with their shoes and some great giveaways. So there's loads to come down for. Great. Loads of it is completely free.
Yeah.
And then you're going to have the A race. You can have the European Cup. You're going to have the fastest men and women in Europe. Looking to win for their team in the European, you know, with all the fun of Brexit going on, it's great to see DBE part of the European melee again, as they basically duke it out. Well, who will be champion? So yeah, there's some. If you wanted to get political, I'm sure you could have a bit of fun with it. But that's not what the event is about. We will be hosting Europe. I think that's quite a nice thing. You're going to have a lot of people chasing the qualifying times for the world champs. So. Fast times and fast ambitions, and that's what it's all about. Is
fantastic.
Having fun, and hopefully also having some fast running while we're doing it.
Great. So get on down there. So it's 6th or 7th of July. I've completely forgotten.
7th. Yeah, it's Saturday, the 6th of July.
Yeah.
Parliament Hill Athletics Track in London. There's some good connections in terms of the London Underground and the Overground. You've got Gospel Oak. Quite easy to get to.
Yeah.
Completely open, and like I said, completely free to attend. So
great.
Come, you know, hardcore runners, come bring some people who think your sport is boring and think you're a dullard, and show them, bring them and come prove them wrong. Show how exciting your sport can be.
Yeah, excellent. Well, I shouldn't keep you too long, so I know you've got a meeting coming up for regarding the event. So I'm just going to ask you three quick fire questions.
Yes.
Which are
hit me.
Are ones that we ask everybody at the interview. And the first is, if you could be anywhere running now, where would it be? Is it a Cornish trail? Is it on the track?
I'd love to be running over the Cornish beaches where I live, and I wish my knees weren't knackered and I wasn't waiting to have a knee op.
Yeah.
So yeah, I'd love to be able to run where I live, which is, it's absolutely stunning to run around here. But yeah, I can't. But yeah, I'd love to do that. I'd love to run on Hale Beach. There you go.
One day, hopefully. Fingers crossed. Right. Yeah.
Recommend
our listeners something. It could be a book, film, podcast. It could be, we kind of recommended coming along to the event already, but that's a good recommendation. What else could we recommend our listeners to join in with?
Well, I was just talking about this last night to a friend. I recently read the book called The Ghost Runner.
Oh yeah, yeah.
If you're looking for a running related book, really good, really interesting, real slice of history of our sport. The battles of, you know, ownership of, you know, what it takes to be able to run and represent your country. It was in the days of professionalism and amateur, and if you fell foul of the three A's. It's really interesting, really interesting character, and quite a poignant story. So I'd recommend that. That's The Ghost Runner.
I agree with that one. And the third question is, what's the greatest endurance performance of all time, in your opinion?
Oh! that's a good question. I'm thinking. I don't know. I don't have an answer.
We've had a lot of Radcliffe's 215. One we haven't had very many of is... Daniel Komen's 3K time, which someone mentioned the other day, which I think is pretty impressive. Didn't even 7:20 something ridiculous for 3K. So that was one we've had recently.
I think at the time, I'd probably go for Emil Zatopek.
Yeah. Okay. Three golds in one game.
Three golds in one game. Absolutely.
Yeah.
because when was that? That was at Helsinki, wasn't it? 52,
yeah,
I think.
Yeah, I think
so. That was when he won gold over the 5,000, the 10,000, and the marathon. I just think I've read his biography.
Yeah.
And you just his background and what he was contending with, and yeah, basically how he drove himself, how he had so much focus to get himself in that shape to break records and to
he was
just another level. I mean, I think he was one of the early pioneers of, rather than someone who ran a bit while also working, someone who basically committed mind, body and soul to seeing what his body could do. So I'm going Emil, 1952 Helsinki Olympics.
And he has a great gurn. You really saw when, like, a bit like John Gilbert, I guess, from Kent AC. You can see when he's running hard. You can see the you can see the pain on his face, which is interesting.
No, again, it's you can connect with that because it doesn't look easy. He's not winning, and you're thinking, God, that looks good. I should take up running. You're looking at that, going, sweet Lord, that running looks like a hard game.
Yeah, how is he doing that to himself? Yeah, I agree.
And also his. His personal story. Yeah, if you ever want to read an interesting story, definitely worth reading the biography of Emil. He's an amazing man. Also, after his running career, he kind of stood out as a very strong individual with some very strong beliefs.
Yeah, excellent. Check it out. Fantastic. Well, good luck, Ben. Obviously, we'll be there at the event to try and document some bits on the evening. But
it'll be really great having you guys there. No, thanks for coming and doing some recordings at the event. Hopefully, we'll give you some great
stories.
Material.
Yeah, excellent.
Absolutely. Fantastic.
Well, good luck in these last few weeks. Fingers crossed everything goes to plan. And we look forward to it.
No, I really appreciate your support. Thank you very much.
So nice interview there, Ben. We're looking forward to profiling the night of the 10Ks over the next few weeks and being there on the night.
We're trying to hustle him, though. We want a plus one VVIP ticket. Yeah. So if we ain't there, you know he didn't give us them extra tickets.
We'll boycott it on the night.
With that little pitchfork. We get that Trump thing, that Trump little blow up, but a poachy. Get a poachy.
Fly it over the top of the earth.
Yeah.
Are you listening, Ben? You listening? So yeah, nice to chat to Ben. We're looking forward to being a part of that night of the 10Ks. And covering it here on the show. You guys need to get involved. So, can't look at the reviews this week, but we need those reviews coming in. We need more and more reviews. But
not on iTunes, because iTunes is closing down.
I think you can still, they'll still be passed over, maybe. So I think if you're going to do an iTunes review, we'd love you to do it. We'll read them out on the show. They're going to move over to Apple Podcasts, which is like Google Podcasts, but Apple Podcasts.
Right.
So that'll be happening soon. But if you get your podcast elsewhere, make sure you always subscribe.
Yes.
And you're always going to get it.
Helps us.
It helps.
And it helps us lure in the big fish.
It helps us lure. Yeah.
And when we get them big fish, we give you the crumbs. Yeah? You get the free sword jackets, you know? Yeah. We give you the good shit.
We get the better interviews. The bigger we can build the show, the better we can get interviews and content and stuff for you to listen to, and it makes it more interesting. Speaking of content, which is the buzzword these days, I've got a lovely photo on Instagram I've seen tagged us in from David James, not the goalkeeper.
What?
Not the goalkeeper. Yeah, not the goalkeeper who tried NFL once, didn't he? Tried to become an NFL player. I think he scored a goal or something.
He's the white version of David James.
He's the white version of David James. He ran the whole 10K this weekend, 39:42. David, nice work. But most importantly, he wore the Let's Get Running vest,
and
it's it's a beautiful vest. Anyone that fancies getting
out? With
matching shorts. He looks a picture. Thanks, David. Thanks for getting out there in the vest. Thanks for buying a vest. Anyone else fancies buying one?
We'll hook
get
you
on
up.
The website. Yeah, I'm going to do a fresh load of orders now because we're running out of sizes. But if you still want one, we will order some new vests up and get them out. Nice. Yeah, well, nice to chat. It's nice to be here together for a change. I've got to go back to Amsterdam tomorrow night. What I should say is, please join our on the show notes, letsgetrunning.co.uk/podcast. Join our, become a friend of the show. So you can put your email in there and you'll join our list. And what we're going to do now, I've been working with Hannah Viner. She used to formerly run the Left Spike fanzine. She's coming up with sort of a summary of the week's running news every week, and she's emailing out to all of our subscribers. So if you fancy getting involved with that, it's good to have a bit of a summary. Saves you wading through Runner's World and Flex Weekly. She'll do that job for you and bring you together a little email every
that's
Friday.
That could be quite vast. Is it going to be a Lee? Is it going to be...
It's going to be a mixture of interesting stories. So she's got her finger to the pulse and she's a good writer. So she will be doing that for us going forward. So if you want to get involved with that, please do. We're also going to try and post that to the Facebook group every Friday. So if you join the Facebook group, if you search out Let's Get Running Podcast on there, you can see all those interesting articles up on that one. Nice one.
What? Let's go.
Right. We're going to go and eat some more caramels. We've had a caramel coffee. You're going to have a caramel something else. We've got some muffins.
There's half of your muffins here that I'm tempted to have a little nibble on.
They're a couple of days old, those.
Don't worry. I'm used to it.
Luckily, she won't listen to this, but my wife's mum is brilliant. She loves food more if it's stolen. Right. So. You know those people? So she loves it. We go down in the morning and we do our buffet breakfast and she's there sneaking.
Rolls. She sounds like an athlete.
You come back from breakfast with the buggy and you look at the buggy and there's about 10 pan of chocolats in there.
So is that the croissant I was eating earlier?
It was, yeah. Purely stolen. Yeah. She's good.
I'm going to get arrested on the way out.
Yeah, I'm not going to let you know where we're staying because they might report me. But hey, yeah, she's good at that. Yeah, nice one. Lovely. Right, have a good weekend, everybody. And I hope you enjoyed Fast Friday if you went.
Okay, nice see one. Ya. Bye.
See ya. Bye.
We zijn er bijna, we zijn er bijna, maar nog niet helemaal.
Papa, wat is dat rode lampje bij het stuur?
Nee.
Een fijne vakantie begint met een goede voorbereiding. Sluit daarom vandaag nog Wegenwacht Europa Standaard af. Dan is de beste hulp, ook op vakantie, altijd dichtbij. Nu met 20 euro korting. Ga naar anwb.nl/wegenwacht. Fijne vakantie.